Hi, I'm Ashley Monroe, and you're listening to Walking the Floor.
I'm walking the floor over you.
Walking the floor.
I'm walking the floor.
Walking the floor over you.
Hola, señores and señoritas. This is Chris Shiflett. And yes, you are listening to another fine edition of Walking the Floor, your favorite podcast. Okay, summer's over, and I'm here to hold your hand and walk you back to work or whatever, back to school, whatever it is you have to go back to. It's time to, put those beach chairs away, put the cooler back in the garage, hang those wetsuits out by the side of the house, and just let the spiders have their way with them, because it's back to reality. But it was a great summer. I'd say it was a great summer, wouldn't you? Nice and hot. Some fun waves came through. Water's been warm. And I've been playing tons of solo acoustic gigs. And there's still a bunch to come over these next couple of months. But I will tell you that pretty much all of them are sold out. Sold out! Except for one. There's one in Kansas City at Knuckleheads on October 11th. There are still tickets. If you go to my website, walkingthefloor.com, you can find your ticket links and get tickets for that. And if you didn't get tickets to Seattle or Portland or Detroit or Calgary or Milwaukee, then book a flight, buy a ticket, and I'll see you in Kansas City. I hope. Played a really good gig this past Saturday out in Goleta, which is like, you know, Goleta's a suburb of Santa Barbara. That's my hometown. I lived in Goleta when I was a real, real little kid. I think I wasn't born in Goleta, but I was living in Goleta when I was born. Let me put it that way. It was really fun to be at the Imperial. It's like a bar that, you know, I think it's only been there for a couple of years or something. It didn't exist back in the 80s when I was around, but it's cool. There's something weird about going home. And home is still the same, but it's all different. But it was different in a good way. It was a new experience for me, a new little bar to play, and they were great, and they did a really good job, and the whole night was fantastic. Saw loads of old friends, former Lost Kittens, and people of that ilk, and everyone was super drunk by the end of it, and seemed to be having a good time. And even Jamie Gibson got out on the dance floor. So you know, it was a good night to be had by all. Happy to be home. All right, let's talk about Zounds.com. Did you know that every order $599 and above is eligible for their exclusive 12-part payment plan? There's no application process, no interest charged ever, and you just pay your first monthly installment and your gear ships immediately. So get on over to Zounds.com and check that out. And you might want to get yourself a pack of D'Addario strings. Because support for Walking the Floor comes from D'Addario. D'Addario, a fine maker of USA-made instrument strings and musical accessories, is committed to sustainability through the Playback Program, recycling over 1 million used instrument strings. For more information on the Playback Program and how to help in its mission of reaching 2.5 million strings in 2018, visit playback.daddario.com. And really, folks, these sponsorship deals we get help keep this podcast nice and free for you and available forever. So do me a favor and buy some D'Addario strings and get on over to Zounds.com and buy a guitar or something. Come on, man. Make it worth their while to sponsor our podcast. All right, let's get on over to today's interview. All right, so this week I have a really great interview with Ashley Monroe, who you know and love. I'm sure you're probably listening to her her latest album, Sparrow, right now. Sparrow, produced by none other than Dave Cobb. We talk a lot about that. We talk a lot about her songwriting. We talk about, I don't know if we talked about, maybe it was before the interview, but her and her manager had to endure a rude Uber driver to get to my studio and do this interview, so thanks, Ashley, for going through that. I only met Ashley Monroe recently when I got to be in the house band at the Country Music Hall of Fame Outlaws and Armadillos gig, and that's also the first time I ever saw her perform, and she just knocked it out of the park. She's got such an amazing voice. She sings a song at the end of it, so make sure you get all the way to the end of the interview. It's fantastic. At one point, and this has never happened before, and I left it in because I just thought it was cool, her manager like reads her mind. Goes, hey, are you singing in your brain? She's like, what, did you hear me? And she was like singing in her mind. Her manager knew it. That's how closely connected they are. We talk about the Pistol Annies' upcoming record that they've been working on. We talk about her growing up fast in Knoxville, getting cuts as a songwriter in Nashville, and a subject that's near and dear to my heart, that lonely, lonely feeling that your favorite songs give you inside. All right, this is Ashley Monroe on Walking the Floor. Time I saw you was in Nashville at that Country Music Hall of Fame Outlaws and Armadillos gig.
Yes.
Which is a crazy night. Crazy night for me. I mean, you live there, right?
Yeah, but I feel like it was extra crazy extra with all crazy. The outlaws roaming about, you know?
Yeah. I mean, since you're there and I'm presumably immersed in, you know, the world of country music and all that sort of thing, nights like that, do you still have like fan moments? Do you ever trip out on all the super legends walking around?
I definitely do. I mean, we did our group photo that night kind of before.
Yeah.
And it was Jesse Coulter's birthday, as you know, and yeah, they put me right next to her, and I was like, oh, I don't want to invade her space, but, you know, I kind of want to sit next to her close because I think she's awesome. You know, I was looking around just at everybody in that picture thinking, to get this many legends kind of rounded up and yeah, together, and everyone was happy, and everyone knew each other, and it was close quarters backstage because it was kind of forced.
Not
to be,
everyone
but it was awesome.
Knew each other. I didn't know anybody.
Oh, yeah.
I was so excited
you,
that night.
You.
I met everybody that night. It was so cool.
Did you only know Dave?
I mean, I knew, you know, a few of the folks.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously like Chris Powell and the other guys, the other people in the house, man, and Hennessy. Uh-huh. And, you know, I knew all those folks. But I'd never met like, you know, Billy Joe Shaver,
yeah,
or Jesse Coulter, or Tanya Tucker. You know, yeah, all I'd never met any of those folks. I'd never met you before. You
know? I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tanya, she is so rowdy.
Oh, my God.
It's awesome, though. It's just like everybody really is, you know, authentic,
yeah,
to who they portray themselves to.
I don't know if you were up there during the rehearsal, but it was like the best little like aside of the night for me because, you know, we just kind of rehearsed through it all day and then did the show. And when Tanya Tucker came up, we ran through the song and she turns around and she was like, you guys are good. We should take this on the road.
Oh, boy.
And then she goes, this is the best line. She goes, all you got to do is work cheap and sleep with me.
Oh,
everyone's like, what?
And she probably wasn't kidding even 1%, you know, which
great.
Is awesome.
All right, let's talk about Sparrow.
Okay.
So this is the first time you worked with Dave Cobb?
Is the first time, yeah. Yeah,
tell me about your record. Like, what's different about it than the records you've made before?
I feel like that a lot changed in me, just in my personal life, even in making this record. Like right before I went and started writing these songs, I had something real, you know, traumatic happen in my life, and I went to what I call a therapy-a-thon, like where you just kind of have to face it, you know. And I lost my father when I was 13. He died of pancreatic cancer, and my mom ran off right after that, and I grew up fast, and there was a lot that needed to be resolved.
And so, where were you?
I'm from Knoxville, Tennessee, originally. Mm-hmm. So a few years ago, I went away and I was like, I'm just going to dig in, you know. So after I did that, and so much healing happened and forgiveness and all of these beautiful things happened. And I felt a change in me right then, kind of when I came back from that. And that's when these songs started coming out. Orphan was the first one of this kind of batch and when I say came in, I do hear melodies so loud, like if you were playing it right now in my ear, that's how loud I hear it. So
really, when you're writing, that's sort of how it comes to you?
Mm-hmm. It's like translating something
really?
I hear. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. And sometimes there are dry spells where you just don't hear anything, but I did after I came back from this. And anyway, Orphan came out, and then Heart on Heart, and a lot of the things that you know, I really was healing from. And then I got pregnant, And then I went in and made the record. And Dave said that he kind of felt a release of the pain when I was actually making the record. Mm. You know what I mean?
Did you guys know each other prior to that?
No, we had dinner once.
Okay.
But I kind of always felt like I knew him. I just knew it would work, you know?
Why go into it when you're pregnant instead of like waiting till, you know, till you get through that and take a break or whatever and then go do it?
Well, I was thinking I just wanted to get the record done.
Right.
Then I could just sit around and eat for a long time. Then I'd already have my record done. Right. All I'd have to do is just trim it back down and hit the road.
Yeah.
You know, you got to plan things quickly.
Sure.
And
sure.
Actually, I felt really inspired. I'd do that after the song, when the songs are fresh. Like, I get inspired. I want to get in there and just capture that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah. So when did you guys record it?
In January of, was that 2017? Yeah.
And when did it come out? It came out this year, right?
Yeah, 4/20. So, yeah.
Was that hard to like, to once you had it in the can, to sit on it?
It was, but the good thing about it is I listened to this record nonstop. The whole time I was pregnant, I would ride around in my car and I joked to Dave that I was Kanye Monroe because I loved myself so much because I rode around just like blasting myself, which I've never done before. Not to say that I'm not super proud of my work before. I just felt different about myself. And I think I started to feel this new confidence to being pregnant, just like proud of myself.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Kind of more respect for myself. And anyway, I listened to it for a long time. And then I was so ready when we released Hands On You. I was like, I can't wait for everybody to hear this.
It's funny. You never know how other people are going to hear your music.
I know.
But when you actually like your record enough to listen to it yourself, I think that really that says something. Yeah.
It does. And I would be listening, like, not to critique. I'd be listening just because I was, like, jamming.
Right.
Like, dancing. It's so strange.
What was the actual process in the studio? I mean, I've made a couple of records with Dave myself, so I'm curious. I just want to hear, like, how you guys did it, so I can compare notes a little bit, you know?
Well, I thought it was just very easy. You know, he lets the music be. And I'm sure he has a plan in his mind, but he doesn't over talk about it or kind of let you know really what's happening. It just feels like I would go in and play the band my song.
Who played on it?
His main guys, Chris Powell,
Brian Allen, all those guys.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they're just amazing. They're
totally.
Just great players. So we would just play the song. And then sometimes we would go like, you know, let's listen to Take Me to the Pilot, Elton John, for reference of string and space and stuff. And sometimes he would just be like, all right, let's go. You know, and so I'd go in my booth and then we'd kind of start jamming. And before I know it, he'd be like, yeah, that's it.
So
is that what he does with you?
Yeah, basically, like, we would go in, like, the, you know, out into the room and sit on the couch and we all, like, have acoustics and kind of I'd play, like, it's funny.
Couch.
Because I just made this, my second record with him, you know, recently, a couple months. Like, when I saw you, it was literally the last day.
Yeah.
And I didn't know him the first time, and I didn't know any of those cats, you know, but then the second time I was like, oh, this is going to be great. Cause it's going to be like so comfortable, you know, we're all friends now and everything, but it's still like, as a songwriter, it's hard to sit there and go like, here's my raw idea.
I know.
You know, what do you think?
He and I
went. And see everybody's reaction, you
know,
and then everybody's, you know, and then he starts tearing it apart and putting it back together better, which is the best part of it. But it's like just that moment of like, when you're just hitting the first chord, you're like, oh,
it's
God.
It's like so naked.
It's like totally.
Your soul is so naked. I know. I did feel like that. And then I would like try not to look him in the eye to make sure, like, I don't expect too much reaction. They might really love it.
Yeah.
No, they were cool. They seemed like it. But
and they move fast.
They do. That's what I felt. And I thought that he just, you know, I would say, I want to go in and double my harmonies. I want to go in and triple my harmonies. I want to go in and put a harmony on the harmony. Okay. Everything all my like kind of gut intuitions, he was like, yeah, and that's what you need to do.
He's always game for it.
Yeah. And I like that because it just lets it be truly the artist. And I mean, unless it was just a terrible idea, I'm sure he would veto it, but he didn't veto it.
Like how together, did you get your songs before you went in? Did you have sort of rough sketches or were they really, you know, worked out?
No, they were pretty much worked out. I mean, he changed like some chord progressions in the bridge and stuff like
that, which
I think it's so interesting how he does do that. And that, you know, when I write it, mine are always just boring, you know, turnarounds or boring solos. But it's, I think that's another cool thing he does is splash different chords, you know, in kind of a simpler song.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's my favorite part of working with him is the collaboration.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. it's hard to learn after. Like I've been learning my record, you know, to play live. And I'm like, totally. What the hell is this chord?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And put this here.
But. It's funny. I had a very similar thing where, you know, when I made my first record with them, you know, obviously like I didn't go play shows with all those cats because they're, you know, they're not there and they're expensive.
I know.
Like
Tanya Tucker said. I wish we could. Maybe together we can afford them.
Yeah. But coming back home and, you know, learning the songs with a bunch of different people, I realized like, God, I wasn't even paying attention in the room, you know, to like kick drum patterns and what the bass player did or whatever. And you're sitting there going like, we're playing it, but it doesn't sound the same.
Just do
like,
what they're doing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I know Chris even got out the bongos on Wild Love. It was cool to watch him play bongos.
Yeah.
He always wore, he always show his arms for you too. I thought it was just me.
Yeah, it's a gun show every day with Chris Powell.
I would too if I had his arms.
Let's talk a little bit about your songwriting. Like I know that you started out as a songwriter in Nashville, right? Before, I mean, you were probably performing and stuff the whole time, but before you had a record deal, weren't you working on the songwriting side of things?
Yeah, I really was. I'd sang always when I was a little girl in church and in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. Just sang a bunch of covers of songs. And then after Dad died, that's when I started writing. And then I thought, you know, wow, I think I could maybe make a living off songwriting. So when Mom and I moved from Knoxville, I just said, all right, I'm just going to write every day. She took me to all my appointments, sometimes twice a day, and just prove to people. Like I would just always have a great idea, always want to prove to people that I was a legit songwriter.
And how old were you at this point?
We moved when I was 15.
So you started like as a professional songwriter that early?
I started really early, yeah. And I got signed my first publishing deal with an amazing woman, Ree Buchanan. And she kind of took me under her wing instantly and, you know, got me co-writes with really great, amazing people. And then, you know, normally it's once it catches and people do believe in you, it kind of, the wildfire kind of spreads. So other people write with you.
And were you getting cuts at that time?
I think my first cut was a song I wrote when I was 19, but I was in my early 20s when I got cut. It was Jason Aldean, The Truth. Number one song on country, and I wrote one with Miranda, Heart Like Mine, that I don't know what year that was. I don't have any idea what year anything happened actually, but it happened in the past sometime.
It's a blur.
And I was young.
I know I was there.
I was there partially. Yeah.
So all through those years, you know, when you're in your teenage years, were you performing and
trying to
make it as a solo
artist. I wanted to be kind of singer-songwriter. I always had the package deal, even though I was writing songs a lot, you know, before. But I thought, you know, writing really developed and still does develop who you are. I mean, how you sing and everything is all in the song, really. And that inspires everything. So I made my first record. I got signed when I was 17 or 18.
To a record deal.
To a record deal on Sony, yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what happened with that? Because it wasn't there, you made your first record and they put out some singles, but then you left the label and then the album eventually came out on a different label.
Yeah, right? It was so weird. It was kind of just bad timing. I made a great record and I had everybody behind me and I was out on a radio tour and they had gotten like a bus. It was just an amazing radio tour, but I was hitting every station, you know?
Right, right.
And in the middle of all that, I got news that the head of the label, that's the guy who signed me, had been let go, and then Sony... And where was I? Sony and I guess BMG were merging, you know, so two labels were going into one.
Right.
So I just kind of fell through the
catastrophe. That is such a record business cliche.
I know it is. You know? It really is. But I kept, I was definitely bummed. I was so sad because it was, you know, a lot of people that I had been working with were fired and all that. But, and I kind of knew that the ship was probably going to sink. I didn't, and really odd on radio tour, people were like, this girl, like one lady was like, you're too young to know about heartache, because I was singing kind of sad songs. So already they were kind of like, what's happening? But anyway, it didn't work out.
I mean, what did you learn from that lesson? I'm always fascinated in, you know, any facet of the record industry, but particularly Nashville and country music and the sort of mainstream business structure that exists around it. Like how young artists first starting out sort of claw any sort of, you know, artistic control or control over what they're doing.
Yeah. And I was really lucky though, because my first record I actually loved and still love. So I was lucky in the fact that Every label I've been on has let me, you know, for the most part, just do my art, make my records. Yeah. It just doesn't ever really stick like they'd like it to. So they probably wish they could control it, which I get. It's a lot of money.
I mean, where do you see yourself sort of stylistically fitting into the, you know?
It's so hard.
Obviously, there's so many different like subgenres sort of within country, you know, but where do you see yourself in that?
I guess I'm technically Americana. I didn't even know genres. It's so hard for me because like my voice is so country and I'm from Knoxville, Tennessee, and I, but you know, it's fine. I'm not even bitter about it, but it's always confusing to me to try to, you know, tell people what I sing because I listen to so many different kinds of music and I don't see genres. I really don't when I listen to music. I just go by feelings. So,
yeah. Well, especially nowadays when we just sort of skip around with on Spotify from song to song, it's like, you know.
Yeah, you're right. But I guess that's what the genre that I see artists kind of like myself that make music that I love, you know, and the stations that I listen to and am inspired by.
Sure.
May I have one of those waters,
please? Oh, yeah. I got that for you, actually.
Oh,
yeah,
I was hoping that was the case. Well, thank you.
Indeed.
Were you singing in your brain just now?
Did you hear it?
Yes.
What's that? You were singing?
In my brain, yeah. That's really weird.
Wait, did you just read her mind? How did...
Literally, she went somewhere with her.
I also went to Elvis because, why wouldn't I?
You're an Elvis fan.
Yeah, I've got his name tattooed
it's
on
funny.
My hip.
Oh, really?
And Love Me Tender on my back.
I ripped this idea off from my wife and then I never finished it. My wife always has these like inspiration boards where she just puts up pictures that she's, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, usually it's like stuff for whatever she's working on. Yeah. You know what I mean? But as you can see, I never finished it.
I'm
like, where can I find some good old pictures to stick on that
Keith Richards. Those are just really cool pictures.
That sums up my musical influences.
I love it.
Pretty much. Merle. Let's talk about that a little bit. When you were a kid, like what gave you the music bug? Like what got you into music? Was it family or environment?
I think all my family grew up on the same street and not all, but a lot of the Monroe side, my mamma on the hill. And so I was, but I always was just different. I don't know how to explain it, but I was different and like a very deep thinker. And I remember my first birthday clearly and thought, you know, I don't know, just, I was just old in there. But I remember when I first started in church, we started going to church and I remember the first time that I felt something through music was I was singing in the choir and it was such a little church. It was just everybody was in the same, you know, choir. And I had that hymnal, I held it upside down. So I think it was like probably 3 or 4. I didn't know even how to read.
Yeah.
And I guess I was an old soul in reading department. But I remember there was a hymn called Have a Little Talk with Jesus, Sit Down and Rest a Little While and He Will Tell You All About Us. It was a beautiful song about having a little walk with Jesus. And I remember I got chills really like all the way down. And I kind of thought, that's weird. I'm not cold. And I just felt that, you know what it is.
Yeah.
And then I remember after we were done singing, I went and sat down next to my mom. And I said, Mom, I just got chills when I was singing that song. And she said, oh, that's the Spirit. And I remember that's kind of when I was like, And then I started paying attention when music kind of gave me that feeling, which Eagles. I remember my dad, when he would put on Eagles 8-track, he had and the cassette. When Desperado would come on, I remember I would cry to my parents and say, oh, I have a lonely feeling. And they'd be like, we're right here. And I'd be like, no, deeper.
Yeah.
You know, it just like, you know.
That's so funny. Mm-hmm. I totally did the same thing when I was
awesome.
A kid.
It
was
I love that.
That Stevie Wonder. There were two songs that used to make me cry when I was
Which
a little
ones?
Kid. It was Southern Nights, the Glen Campbell version.
Oh,
And Isn't She Lovely by Stevie Wonder.
Wow.
You know, starts out with the baby crying, like for whatever. And my brothers used to just roast me when I, you know, we were listening to like Kiss and the Stones and stuff like that. But those songs would come on the radio. I'd be like,
oh,
in the back
Chris,
seat trying to
I'm
hide
so
it.
I'm so sorry, but I'm so happy that you feel that too.
Yeah. I honestly believe like there are certain people, you know, everybody loves music, but I think that, and it's probably mostly people that become musicians or do this or whatever, but feel it differently.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a physical
it
thing.
It is. And it's good when it's that way, I think, but it's scary because you're so sensitive to it. Like, we went to Amoeba Records yesterday, and I love that store. But they had on something that was super, super fast, and it wasn't like, it just didn't hit me right.
Right. And I was like, Ariane, we have to come back tomorrow. I'm stiffening up.
Right, right. It's like the Uber driver.
Oh, I know. Same reaction. My curls were, my toes were curled.
Like, so who do you think of besides Elvis or the Eagles or whatever? Like, who are your sort of primary influences?
Well, then I was moved by things my parents played, and they played music a lot. They played like Lynyrd Skynyrd, and I would feel that. Then they'd play Bonnie Raitt. That was on a lot. Mm. But then we'd have like Alabama on, and I'm trying to think of our tapes. And then my poppy would listen to Eddie Arnold and Jim Reeves a lot.
Right.
Oh, he would sit me down when I was really young and play the Jim Reeves song, "We Were Just 100 Miles to Marianne." And he would like say, at the end, like the horse dies. It's so sad. And he'd be like, "Listen now. Here's only 30 yards, and there were hot biscuits in the pan." I'd be like, oh, but it made me, I think, a better writer listening to songs like that, you know? Yeah. Patsy Cline. Patsy Cline was my first tape.
Mm.
And I just, that was when I started teaching myself how to yodel, which my brother, that's 5 years older, didn't like that phase.
So that's when you started singing?
And then that's when I started singing, like wailing, when I started listening to, Patsy Cline.
And in church, too?
Yeah, in church.
Okay, so how old were you when you first started playing out?
Like my first debut out was in church. My Sunday school teacher said, I know you can sing, and if you don't tell Charlie, our preacher, that you're going to sing on Sunday, and he's going to call you up. And I was really shy. And so I told Charlie before church I'd like to sing. So I got up and just sang Amazing Grace a cappella. And they really dug it. But then the next time...
Do you remember
time,
what that felt like on stage?
Yeah,
in that moment, because, that first time, like, whoa, that something worked here.
Yeah, I just knew happening. They felt it. Right. Because Raymond Rutherford would say, "Bless the Lord." He said that the whole time. And I was like, he loves it. If no one else does, Raymond's in it. Then I tried to do it the next week, Farther Along. We'll Know All About It, another one of my favorite hymns. And I didn't want to have the book with me, and I forgot the lyrics. And then I almost quit.
Hmm.
But then I got back in the game.
So what's your album's still pretty new at this point. I assume you're in the middle of a lengthy touring cycle.
I'm kind of...
Do you tour in cycles? Or do you just kind of tour all the time?
I don't tour all the time. I am excited to start touring. I'm just kind of starting the engines of the touring machine. Because I did just have a child. He just turned one. But I've kind of been a homebody, really. I mean, I've done...
You bringing them out on the road?
I think I will next year. I think it'll be easier after
that. It's easy when they're babies. I got three boys, so we went through all that a long time ago. But I tell you, it's easier when they're babies.
And I think getting him used to it, like next year he'll be, you know, one turning two, like getting him used to sleeping new places and all that. But I'm just now kind of hitting, you know, main cities right now.
Right.
Just cranking the engines.
And what, do you go out headlining? Do you go out supporting other people? Like, do you mix it up?
I mix it up. Right now, I'm just trying to do things that matter, like things that are important, not just say yes to everything, because I'm not one that can just road dog it up for weeks. I don't know.
Do you do that?
Unless
weekend
I'm with weekend Miranda, warrior it's thing. Nicer. She's got a bus, but my style, it's just hard. It's just, I don't know. Maybe I could have had my family with me. I don't know. Next year, we'll see.
I'm telling you, it's easy when they can't talk back, can't run away, and there's no school schedule to have to do.
Yeah, no school. That's big. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. It's funny. This summer, we usually bring the kids out during the summer because during the school year, obviously, we can't. But it's like the first time that my oldest son was like, "Yeah, I don't really want to. I want to go hang out with my friends.
I don't want to be on tour anymore."
It's like, what? You don't want to come out with the rock band? What are you talking about?
I know they're bored.
Totally.
How dare they?
Because it's
bored.
Normal to them. It's I know. Not like there's no like. You know, I always think about that all the time. There's no like when I was a kid, I was like, "What goes on behind that curtain?"
I know, and it's nothing.
You know, they know what
know.
Goes on.
It's
you
just
know,
catering,
bunch of dudes
hang
sitting around looking at their iPhones.
Exactly. That's exactly what happens.
So what about Pistol Annie's? Any? Is there going to be another Pistol Annie's? What? The last one came out in what? 2012, 2013, something like that?
Yeah, something like that. And yes, I'm telling you what. Yes, we're going to have something come out hopefully this year, but we're putting the finishing polishes on our record right now.
Really? Yeah. Oh, okay, great. Oh. How did that whole thing come together? Were you guys all friends?
I was friends with Miranda. We both were actually on Sony when I first signed there. And at first she didn't like me because I was another blonde girl singer.
Uh-oh.
But then she liked my song, so then we became friends. But her and I hung out all the time back then. I mean, it was years ago. And we were at her place in Oklahoma and we were watching TV. And we just, I think we just got back from like an Airstream. We went camping, just her and I. Then we came back and I said, just out of the blue, I just started thinking about Angelina Presley, who is the third member of Pistolanis. And I'd written with her a few times and I just really loved her music and her, her record. Loved it. And out of the blue, Mary and I were sitting there and I said, have you heard of Angelina Presley? You need to hear her. And so I went, and at the time it was MySpace, pulled up her MySpace and played a song. And Miranda goes, it's a band. It's a band. And I was like, I think it is too. It was almost like just a weird moment. We called Angelina, and she, I think Jed, her son, was like 2 or 3 at the time. I don't know. It was a little boy. She was like, why are y'all calling me at midnight? And Miranda's like, do you want to be in a band with us? And she was like, are y'all high? Like, yes, but we still want to be in a band.
We're calling you in the middle of the night.
That's
we couldn't
why we're
wait.
So open to new
it's
ideas.
It's too good.
Yeah.
How does that work? Like, I know, like, a lot of times in, like, you know, super groups, if we're going to call it a super group.
Yeah.
We can call it, I can call it a super group.
You can, too.
Yeah. A lot of times in those situations, everybody's used to being, you know, the leader in their situation and not compromising. And so it can, you know, they often like fall short.
Yeah.
And that's obviously not the case with Pistolanis. So how does that sort of the creative process work? Do you guys all sit down and flesh out songs together?
Yeah, we are so, and this record more than ever, like we are just in constant communication about the music. And all three of us have very... very distinctive sounds, but we're all fans of each other. So it's like, I like it when Angelina's like, I have a production idea because I want it. I'm gonna like it, and it's gonna be different.
Yeah.
And they're different. I don't know. We all really do equally contribute. And then if there's anything that comes up where, like, we don't know, we just really do just talk it out and then go, okay, that's the answer.
Right.
I don't know. It's just, it's kind of cool how
that's
it works.
So rational and adult and ego-free.
It
doesn't sound like the music industry.
I know. It took not being rational and adulty, I guess, to figure out what does work.
That's funny.
But we respect each other so much as artists that we really listen to each other and cool. value what the other one does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, would you like to play a song?
Yes.
I would like that.
Okay.
So considering your guitar sitting right there.
Mm-hmm.
All lonely.
And freshly tuned. Are you ready? This song is called She Wakes Me Up. I actually wrote this, started this song about a dog I had gotten named Betty that was kind of getting on my nerves because she was sick and just needy. But every morning she would wake me up and she was so happy and like lick my face. So I wrote, I love my Betty, she's the light of the world. She wakes me up with the sun in her eyes. But then I turned it into a real song. She's the light of the world. She wakes me up with the sun in her eyes. She's not perfect, but she's my little girl. And the night goes cold when she cries. Oh, my baby, oh, my angel. Won't you come on down and put your arms around me? Oh, my darling, oh, my angel. Tells me when I'm doing something wrong. She just pulls me gently, she leads me home. Sweetest spirit I have ever known. And when the day dies, she's still shining on. Oh, my baby, oh, my angel. Won't you come on down and put your arms around me? Oh, my darling, oh, my angel. Won't you come on down? She's the light of the world. She wakes me up with the sun in her eyes. Oh, my baby, oh, my angel. Won't you come on down and put your there. See?
That's why you're a real pro.
Thanks,
that
Chris.
Like an album take that
oh,
one.
Thanks. Print it and ship it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Ashley Monroe on Walking the Floor. Make sure you get on over to walkingthefloor.com. I'm going to put up some links to whatever she's got going on for you to check out and see what's happening in Ashley Monroe's world and buy her tickets, stream her records, buy her t-shirts. You know how to do it. When you're done with that, make sure you sign up for the Walking the Floor playlist in Spotify and make sure you listen to all the old episodes of Walking the Floor in the iTunes store, on Spotify, you know, wherever it is you get your podcasts. Check it out. There's a gazillion of them and you haven't listened to them all, have you? So there's work to be done. And like I said before, make sure you buy some D'Addario strings. Make sure you frequentzounds.com for your music gear needs. And this is Chris Shiflett signing off again this week. Adios, amigos!